Welcome to Peak Tales, a conversation about chromatography. Now here's your host, John.
Hi, this is John. Welcome back to another episode. Please pay attention and listen to the end of this episode, as I will have a very special loyalty promotion for loyal podcast listeners. Now, let's get right to the content. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Peak Tales podcast. This is John, and today we're going to be talking about a topic that we hear often, but sometimes doesn't get addressed. And I'm with my good friend, Eric Pavlich. Eric is a product specialist with our team, and his specialty is GC. So we're going to be talking about GC column selection, and he is the expert of the day. Hi, Eric. How are you? Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
So I've set the bar pretty high here as our expert for today, but I know you've spoken in front of countless audiences on these topics for many, many years. You've done the work in the lab. You've put in the time. You've been the host of numerous webinars and things of that nature. So we just thought we would bring a discussion today about GC column selection to our podcast audience. So really, where should we begin if we're looking, if we're trying to determine how to select the best column for our GC separation?
Well, I think it always begins, John, with having a good discussion of what customers' needs are. And one of the first things that I'll ask when I talk to somebody new that's asking me about a column is, well, have you done it already in the past? Have you actually already tried something and already have a pathway that you've ventured down? And a lot of times customers have a pretty good idea of where they want to go. Outside of that, there's a lot of different resources available online. I'm sure everybody is familiar with using Google. We also have our Agilent help desk. We have a couple of different resources, things like our ScanView application database. There's a lot of different resources that are available out there, so no sense in reinventing the wheel. But as I mentioned, a lot of times when people ask what kind of column do I recommend, they usually have a pretty good idea. So I treat it just like if you were going to buy a car on a car lot. You should have a dialogue. There should be an exchange of ideas of what fits the customer's needs. So it does usually start with, well, what are the critical things that you're looking for? What are the specific needs that you might have that maybe are a little bit different from somebody else? So, you know, it's asking those questions about what's important to a customer, as opposed to, you know, me having a column that I want to try and throw down somebody's throat that maybe that isn't necessarily the best fit for them.
Excellent. Yeah. And what if, you know, I've got a method that I need to run and I, you know, I can't deviate from that. Is there a good place to start to try to get an idea of which column to choose for that methodology?
Yeah, if you're looking at specific methods, say a USP method or an EPA method, we do have different databases where you can find those things. A lot of times, if you're looking at the methods that are out there, it'll give you a column recommendation along with as far as the column, it'll have an or equivalent listed in there. But yeah, there's a lot of different resources out there to try and start getting you down that right pathway. Really where things start to maybe get a little bit more where I get involved is when people start saying, well, I don't have a method. Maybe I don't have any experience, or I'm new to doing GC. So how do I jump off the wagon as it is to try and figure out what I want to try and do?
Yeah, and I know we've got some resources online, certainly at agilent.com, that can help you when it comes to application notes and looking at what others have done before, right? And that gives you a fair idea of where to leap off, or at least a leap off point. And then we have our technical specialists that you can contact on the phone. And we've got people like yourself that are out in the field that can come visit as, you know, as appropriate. So we do have many ways in which you can engage with us to get the information that you need and make the right selection. Why don't you talk a little bit about plot columns versus what I would call regular GC columns?
Yeah, really, when you start down the pathway of what kind of column do I want to choose for my application, you'll find that there's really two, well, I could say there's really three categories of columns that we generally discuss. There's plot or porous layer open tubular columns. Those are solid particles that are coated inside the tubing. And those are used for things like permanent gas analysis, basically really, really volatile types of compounds, things that are lighter than say something like butane. If you're looking for something like that, then a porous layer open tubular column is the way to go. If you are going for maybe more traditional gas chromatography, that's where wall-coated open tubular columns come into play. And a wall-coated open tubular is a liquid phase that's coated on the inside of the column. So the different reaction or the different mechanisms of a plot versus a wall-coated open tubular, for a plot column, it's adsorption with a D. So it's more those particles are kind of hindering things as they're going down the flow path, whereas on a wall-coated open tubular with that liquid stationary phase, things are absorbing into that stationary phase and desorbing off, and you have that equilibrium distribution as things flow down through the column and come out at the other end. So for most people's applications, unless you're doing permanent gas analysis, refinery work, I tend to talk more about wall-coated open tubular columns than I do plot columns personally.
Okay, yeah, that seems to be more popular, right? What about polar versus nonpolar?
Well, that's where we start down the pathway of how do we actually choose which kind of stationary phase do we want to go with? So when we're looking at, so we're narrowed down to a wall-coated open tubular type of column, that's where you start saying, well, there's this myriad of different columns where we have a wide range of columns that go from a very nonpolar stationary phase type, things like your DB1s, HP1s, those 100% polydimethyl siloxane types of columns. And then we go with varying degrees of polarity and substitution all the way to the polyethylene glycol types of columns, the very polar types of columns that we're looking at. And where do you fall into the spectrum of trying to pick one versus the other? Well, it generally comes down to what kind of analytes you might be looking at. So if you have an analyte that has some polarity, you're probably going to want to choose a stationary phase that has some degree of polarity. So like dissolves like, oil and water doesn't mix. So try and pick the right kind of polarity that matches the analytes that you're actually trying to separate.
Exactly. Yeah. Unique chemistries. What about that? Certainly we offer several opportunities, if you would, within that space.
Yeah, polarity is the first thing that we usually start going down once we have that decision tree of do I want a plot column, a wall-coated open tubular, and I failed to mention the packed columns that are still out there. So they are still out there. We generally don't have too many discussions about them. But when you start looking at the spectrum of columns that are out there, so I mentioned the HP1s, DB1s, the very nonpolar, and then the wax on all the way on the other end of the extreme. In between, you have different chemistries. You have different phenol substitutions that maybe add some polarities, but you also have things like cyanopropyl, you have trifluoropropyl. So there's a lot of different substitutions out there that fall somewhere in the middle. So we start with polarity, but if that doesn't quite get you the separation that you're looking at, and you can try differing degrees of just looking at polarity, but when you look at the nature of different chemical compounds, having something that maybe gives you a little bit of hydrogen bonding or dipole interaction might be necessary to try and pull apart some tough analytes that really want to stick together. And that's where maybe you might want to choose something like a cyanopropyl. Say you're doing something that might require some fatty acid methyl ester separation. That might be the chemistry that you want to try and start going down.
Okay, and there are other things to consider too. So I'll just list them and maybe you can touch on them. briefly as we look to get ready to wrap up here. So things like column ID, film thickness, column length, and then inertness overall.
Yeah, so when you look at what comprises resolution in a GC column, it's essentially comprised of three variables. So you have your selectivity, your retention, and your efficiency. So all of those things basically come together to have that resolution equation. And when you start playing around with the different column dimensions and options that are out there, so as you mentioned, things like your ID, your film thickness, your length, all of those things come together to form a nice cohesive picture of what kind of column we want to choose. And there's always a pro and a con when we start looking at the different variables that we might want to try and choose. So something like a smaller ID of column does give us a more efficient column. So your theoretical plates go up with a smaller ID, so things are bouncing around inside that capillary column a little bit more quickly and efficiently. The downside is as we go to a smaller ID, we lose some capacity, we maybe have higher pressures. If we go looking at film thickness, on the plus side, if we go to a thicker film, we get more retention, which is great if you have really volatile compounds. So if you're looking at things, maybe you're doing headspace analysis, purge and trap, or you're looking at permanent gas types of work on a capillary column, you might start looking at really thick stationary phase film thicknesses to try and hold those analytes onto the system, so you can actually try and do some work in trying to pull things apart. And then we get on to column length, which, as we mentioned, the pros and cons, length does give you more theoretical plates, so we have more power to try and get the resolution that we want. But the cost is a concern, and I say cost literally, in that it costs more for a 60-meter column than it would for a 30-meter typically. And the runtime that you're looking at for a 60-meter versus a 30-meter is typically going to be about twice as long, because you have twice the length of flow path.
Great. Yeah. I know you were going to talk, finish up talking about inertness, correct?
Yeah. So it really, all of these things come together to give you a proper solution of what kind of column you want to choose. But I always tell people that it's really important to have that nice dialogue and exchange of ideas, because if somebody calls up and they say, hey, I really like the quality of chromatography that I'm seeing, but I want to just speed things up, that is an entirely different conversation than if somebody says, hey, I can't get these two analytes to resolve or possibly to separate from one another. That is a little bit of a different discussion. And all of these things kind of, they do play a little bit of a backseat, if you will, to, well, the inertness of my system. Because if I have active sites that are present in my flow path, not just in my column, but my liners, it could be in the ferrules and the vials, anything that comes into contact with my matrix or my analytes of interest, well, that's going to have a detrimental effect on my quality of chromatography. So that's why we want to try and optimize the level of inertness that we possibly can, especially if we're looking at very active types of compounds. So things like your pesticides, drugs of abuse, acids, those types of things, that's where having the most inert flow path can really play an important part also.
That's great, Eric. Thank you so much for giving us kind of an introduction, certainly, to this. I would encourage our listeners to listen back into the archives. We've got some very specific methodologies for GC that we discuss. Again, this was kind of meant to be an overview, or more or less an introduction on how to do column selection. And then we'll have some show notes that will have some links to appropriate places that you may want to go on the Agilent.com website to help you make the decisions that you need to make. Thank you so much, Eric, for being with us today. I hope to have you on the podcast in another episode coming up real soon. But bye for now.
All right. Thanks, John.
Hey, thanks again for joining us for this important conversation, and I want you to look forward to some future episodes of the Peaktail Podcast, but right now I'd ask you to share some of these with your colleagues. It's a great opportunity to get them to learn about things that they may not be familiar with. leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and any of the other podcast apps where you can find us, certainly. And let me give you that promo code. The promo code for being a loyal listener is 1599, 1599, only available in North America. And that gives you a one-time discount on some consumables and chemistries. There are certain restrictions that apply, and you can talk with your sales rep about all of that. But we want to provide that to you so that we can recognize you as a loyal listener. Tell your friends. That's pretty much the way podcasts get found and discovered, and how we can continue to bring you this great content. So we appreciate that and look forward to hearing from you soon. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Peak Tales. For more information on what was discussed today, contact your local Agilent representative or go online to agilent.com.